8 minutes away from 7 o'clock. If you're riding around our neighborhood, you might see an automobile park from which our next guest has just emerged, and you'll see on the license plate the words Dr. Dunk. Duncan McKinley is the doctor. He has a PhD in psychology. And to introduce him to you, I'd like you to listen to just a little of the soundtrack from the new documentary about his life, which we're going to be discussing right now. This is a tape that was recorded the day that Duncan McKinley defended his PhD dissertation. If you've ever known one who's gotten one, you know how tense a moment that can be. He is, as a sufferer, a lifelong sufferer from Tourette's syndrome, awaiting the tribunal that will review his work. This is what he's got to say.
There's so much that has culminated in today that I'm standing here right now, and I can't quite believe it. And there's been so much out of my control. I don't know. I don't know how today's going to turn out.
Now that sound you heard in the middle of that sentence, do not adjust your sets. I'll play it for you just one more time. That's the sort of thing that might punctuate an otherwise extremely interesting, entertaining, rational conversation with Duncan McKinley. It may or may not be heard in ours this morning, but he's in to talk about those little interruptions that have peppered his existence so far on Earth. Dr. McKinley, good morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
What an interesting film. I wish I could just, you know, quick fast-forward it for our audience. They could see it all. Let's begin with your childhood, because this is before much of the world, much less you, knew what Tourette's syndrome was. And I'm trying to imagine what was going on in your kid's head as you began for the first time behaving this way.
Well, it's too overwhelming an issue for a seven-year-old really to muster. Every once in a while, the very sober voice in the back of my head would say, Duncan, there's something really wrong here. You're very different somehow. And I would stuff that voice down as much as I could, because I didn't have the language for understanding what was happening. I didn't really have the mind frame for knowing how to deal with these symptoms or anything. And it was like living in a minefield, really. You never really knew when what was going to blow up in your face. But you're pretty sure you're going to be laughed at or otherwise in trouble by the end of the day.
Or sent to your room without dinner. And your parents didn't know what this was either. So when you... And you have, I hope most people by now know about Tourette's syndrome. When these barks, when these ticks would explode out of you, how do they react?
Well, I did a lot of what's called suppressing when I was younger. That it ticking is like scratching an itch. That the involuntary part of Tourette's syndrome isn't actually the movement or the noise. It's the urge to eventually give a noise or make a movement. And so... like scratching an itch, you can somewhat hold off on the urge for a little while. There's a rebound effect later where when you give in, you make up for lost time. Mm-hmm. But because the different reactions I was getting told me, okay, even when I let a little bit of this out, people are not responding well, I did the math and figured, okay, I'm going to do the mental equivalent of holding this in as much as I can until I'm by myself and then...
explode.
Yeah, Tasmanian right. Devil. Hmm.
There is this moment brilliantly in the film when you see an Ann Landers column which tells you for the first time not only what's wrong with you, but there are lots of other people who are reading that column learning the same thing at the same time.
It was cathartic. It was by far the most pivotal moment of my life. And in retrospect, there was, I guess, what you'd call pre-diagnosis Duncan that died that day and a post-diagnosis Duncan that was born who... is a much healthier individual 10 years later, and peace to pre-diagnosis Duncan, because he was one sad, depressed young man.
Can we go back to that PhD defense?
Sure.
You're sitting in this room, ticking as you're doing a little bit now, knowing you're about to present yourself. You're, by the way, doing your PhD in Tourette's, so you have to believe you're going to have a receptive audience. But in that performance, in this performance, as you perform your life, have you been able to forget about the fact that other people are going to find your behavior remarkable?
I have. I've learned that throughout those years, my worst enemy was myself. That when I had a poor attitude about the Tourette's, and when I believed that I wasn't good enough, or that I was a freak, and that no one would want to be my friend or ever go out with me, or that sort of thing, it really mirrored then how other people responded to me. And as I've come to acceptance about my symptoms and really relegated them to just another quality of myself, I find that other people have responded in kind, that people often report to me that it's amazing, I didn't think I could ever get used to something so bizarre as this, but I don't even notice you tick anymore. Mm. And you just go on about your day.
At the end of the film, you say something that you know we're going to find very remarkable, and that is that even if you could relieve yourself tomorrow of this, you're not sure you would.
I know I wouldn't.
You know you wouldn't.
Part of...
I want to interrupt you.
Sure.
Tomorrow someone steps forward, he's about to win the Nobel Prize by absolutely curing Tourette's syndrome, and you're going to say no thanks?
Absolutely. I would be more disordered at this point if I woke up tomorrow and didn't have Tourette's syndrome. One of the roads to self-acceptance was recognizing that Tourette's is really, it's an amplification of self. And while we in North America tend to look at the negative and focus on the negative and talk about the quote-unquote symptoms, there's a lot of other quote-unquote symptoms that are positive aspects of wearing yourself on your sleeve that I've learned are much more of a benefit to me than the tics are a liability.
There's an amazing piece of film at the end of the documentary showing a huge luncheon, a convention of people with Tourette's. Are most of those people, and as they pan the room, we're seeing a variety of behaviors, are most of the people in a place where you are right now, or are most Tourette's sufferers, I mean, you academically and personally have been through so much, do they have that overview, do they have that piece that you do with...
I really feel that people are going that direction. I get so excited anymore when I meet an 8-year-old who's ticking away, and I ask him, do you have a hard time at school? Do people tease you? And he looks at me with a blank expression and says, why would they tease me? And it astounds me. I can't think of anything more tangible I could do with my life than to contribute to something like that.
Because 200 years ago, people would have been accused of having demonic possession.
Skull trifening, you know, yeah, you name
absolutely.
It. Burn at the stake.
Fascinating film. Thanks for telling us about it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Duncan McKinley's story is told in the film Life's a Twitch. It premieres today at the Hot Docs Festival. That's at 4:15 at the Royal Cinema, 706 College Street. You can find out more information at the festival's website, www.hotdocs.com. The film largely supported and financed, by the way, by TVO, which I like to mention because we want to remind you of the work that public broadcasters, us and they, do for you.